Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
This is All Living in WNYC. I'm Allison Stewart, and we are live in the green space with this fantastic audience. Thanks, you guys, for coming down. So, this is a true story. Last fall, on October 5th, I got an email from my friend Scott, like real friends. We went to each other's weddings. And he listened to the show, and he said, "Hey, Allison, if you're looking for a guest, I highly recommend Heidi Schreck. She's currently doing a show called What the Constitution Means to Me. She wrote and is performing it. It's based on her years as a constitutional competitive debater when she was in high school. She won enough debates to pay for her college tuition. It's a deep introspective look at the Constitution and how it relates to women, and specifically women's rights and violence against women. It's very personal and prescient to our national climate. Either way, please go see it. If you need help getting tickets, let me know. She's a dear friend and our upstairs neighbor." You're awesome and thanks. So funny, I got that email and we had literally just booked Heidi on our show. And Scott's email pretty well summed up your show, yeah, Heidi.
Really, I should have asked him earlier how to describe the show. That's excellent.
Excellent, right? Yeah. Put that on your website. But for folks who haven't heard or heard any clips about the show, let's take a listen to a little bit of Heidi from What the Constitution Means to Me.
When I was 15 years old, I would travel the country giving speeches about the Constitution at American Legion halls for prize money. This was a scheme invented by my mom to help me pay for college. I would travel to big cities like Denver and Fresno. I would give a speech, win a whole bunch of money, and then bring it back to put in my little safety deposit box for later. I was actually able to pay for my entire college education this way. Thank you. Thank you. It was 30 years ago and it was a state school, but thank you. A few years ago, I was thinking about the Constitution for various reasons. And I thought it would be interesting to go back and see what my 15-year-old self loved so much about this document, because I did. I loved it. I was a zealot. I was a true believer. So I called my mom. I asked her to send me the speech. She had thrown it away, which is weird, because like most moms, she saves everything. When I was 12, I got a buzz cut so I could look like Annie Lennox, and she still has the bag of hair. But for some reason, she threw away my prize-winning speech. So I thought what I would do is resurrect the speech and the contest based on what I remember about myself at 15.
So Heidi came in, we did the interview, and at the end of the interview, I'd asked if, hey, is Netflix or HBO called? She said no, but guess who did come calling? Broadway. When the Constitution Means to Me is now running on Broadway. It's running through July at the Helen Hayes Theater. The New York Times Review said of the Broadway run, quote, "It is not just the best play to open on Broadway so far this season, but also the most important." Heidi Schreck is back with us, as well as the play's director, Oliver Butler. Welcome back to All of It, Heidi, and welcome, Oliver.
Thank you. Thanks
Oliver.
For having us.
Thanks for having us back. It's really, really wonderful to see you again.
So, you know, you say in the clip that you wanted to revisit your 15-year-old self.
Yes.
So, when you were your 15-year-old self, what was it about the Constitution that just fueled this interest, this desire, this zealotry?
Well, first of all, there was the scholarship money.
Yes.
Second, I was, you know, a 15-year-old. I was very, I was kind of like self-righteous and very optimistic and kind of a 15-year-old who really wanted to fight for justice. I had a lot of like political I don't know. As a 15-year-old, I was very obsessed with fairness and with justice, and I also loved history. And so I was just really into the Constitution as this this document of justice. And at that age, my dad's a history teacher, so he probably instilled his love of the document. But I was just really into it as this beautiful creation that could help human beings become more equal and to sort of help us treat one another better. Later, I began to see that wasn't necessarily the case.
Yeah, I'm curious, now that you're grown up Heidi and you look back at 15-year-old Heidi, Does everything you just say still stand, or does grown-up Heidi see something else in 15-year-old Heidi? Why she might, this teenager
yes.
might be so drawn to the Constitution?
I mean, I think I still carry around my 15-year-old sense of idealism. It's just like a tempered idealism now. I still have a deep commitment to social justice, but, you know, I just know a lot more now. I've been through a lot more. And my teenage obsession with the Constitution has evolved into a more sort of clear-eyed look at the document. I've spent 10 years researching this show, and I've come to understand all the ways in which, in particular, it failed the women in my family. And so I like to say I sort of had this like teenage love affair with the Constitution, mm-hmm. and now I have a more grown-up relationship with it.
Gotcha. So, Oliver, at what state was the play, the performance, when you first encountered it?
Heidi first came to me around 2 years ago. And at that point, she had, I would say, most of her section written, just not in the order that it was in. You know, I would say like 80, 90% written, but not really an idea of exactly the sort of way in which the story would be told, but the stories were there. And she told me the story. You know, we had drinks up at the West Bank Cafe, and she just sort of told me the story, and I found the story extremely compelling. I was really motivated also by the idea of this potential for creating a model of civic activism, and also her interest in making something where something very practical is happening, this recreation of something that I thought could be really powerful. And so she told me about it, and I just said, this is something I want to be a part of. And the play itself has sort of become this thing that has helped me evolve as a person over the last 2 years into sort of the activist person that I am now, and has work to sort of unify my artistic selves and my activist selves into what feels like more like one person.
Because maybe the universe puts you together. You're part of a theater couple called the Debate Society.
Yes, that's right.
There's a big debate about the Constitution at the end of the show. So as you were, and we've called it a play.
Yes.
Now some people might say, isn't this like a one person, like Leguizamo kind of show? But it's a play.
It's a three-person, one-person play.
Yes.
Yeah, there are three of us in the play. I absolutely believe it's a play, but it is a play with an unusual structure and a kind of, a form, I think a new kind of form.
Yeah, I definitely think it's a play. My theater company, we've spent years working on plays with sort of unconventional structure. And I think our definition of plays and actually how we look at structure needs to expand. And that's why, I mean, this absolutely falls into at least my definition of what a play is. But I also hope that, it maybe inspires other people to think like, you know, this thing we call the play can have a variety of structures. And that's really, really great. You know, that actually welcomes more people and more traditions into the sort of theatrical community.
My guests are Oliver Butler and Heidi Schreck. We're talking about What the Constitution Means to Me, which is currently playing on Broadway. It's really fun to say that.
I know.
Unreal. It's unreal.
So last, when we talked to you before, it was on East 4th Street, right?
Yep.
What has been the most challenging thing to translate from that intimate theater on East 4th Street to the Broadway stage?
We're at the Helen Hayes Theater, which I still call the Helen Hayes, and it's quite intimate. Mm-hmm. I was scared when we first moved into the theater that it would feel overwhelmingly large and the play would lose its quite personal. It would lose its sense of being that personal and small, but actually the theater's quite welcoming in that way, so that has not been a problem. That was the thing I was most worried about. The interesting thing that's happened on Broadway is that audiences are actually much more vocal. They really want to participate in the debate. They talk back to me a lot. There's a lot of they get into it with one another at the end of the debate. I think they shout out things. So that part has actually been quite fun. I don't know what you've...
The play, we first did a presentation even before the 4th Street presentation at New York Theater Workshop on 3rd Street, over on Avenue B with Club Thumb, and that was a 70-seat theater.
Yes.
And I do have to say that that was the big concern for me, is the thing that was so special at every point was like this tiny theater, really, really close up, something that's really happening there. Can we retain that? Mm-hmm. And Heidi's absolutely right. We had, in some strange way, I find this, the Broadway presentation feels even more like the 70-seat theater because of this electricity that people show up with. And I'm not sure what it is, if it's, you know, part of it is people have heard a little bit about the show, but they seem to show up from the beginning and feel like, I would prefer to like this. And I have a few things I want to say, too.
Yeah, I want to participate.
Yeah.
Yeah, we've had some interesting, you know, we have a judge. We choose a judge at the end of the play, and we've had interesting things happen. Like, one woman formed a whole committee and
out of audience members?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Oh, that's awesome.
And, you know, we've made a decision to allow the end to be open in this way, and this has been a thing, a conversation Oliver and I have had, is, like, how to keep, you know, the guiding ethos of the show to be like, we are opening this up to democracy at the end of the play. And so we were like, okay, form your committee and we'll see what happens.
Watching it was it was a pretty early preview actually.
Yeah, yeah.
So of course, at that point, you're sort of wondering, is this what every show is going to be? And it was like watching a slow motion crash where at the end, either, you know, the crash makes everyone healthier and better or like more exciting, but it ended up being amazing.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah, I was worried about the running time of the show, but it all worked out.
So for people who haven't seen any clips about this, at the end of the show, there's a debate about whether we should keep or abolish the Constitution. And you have to you don't know which side you're going to take each night.
Yes.
And your formidable opponents are two young women. They alternate. So just to give you a little taste, this is Rosadelli, right?
Yep.
This is one side, for example, that is presented about whether the Constitution should remain or be abolished.
Judges, our Constitution is like the Horcrux in Harry Potter. It is a piece of our founding father's souls that is still somehow still alive, ruling over the rest of us. Let me explain. In Harry Potter, a Horcrux is an object in which a dark wizard has hidden a fragment of their soul for the purpose of gaining immortality. It is time to destroy the Horcrux so that we can move on from the sins of our past and finally write a document that is truly democratic and fully alive.
She's on fire.
She's incredible. And I just have no good argument for the Horcrux thing. It's so genius. She came up with it and I was like, yeah, I think you win that round.
Let's check out the other young woman you often debate. This is Thursday Williams.
Judges, I agree that we have moved backward on some issues, but we all know there are ebbs and flows to progress. I would like to remind you all of the woman and dog running along the beach. Yes, I was listening from backstage. This brings me to my final argument. If we abolish the Constitution, we risk sending the country into complete chaos. Our country is more divided than it has ever been. The only thing holding us together as Americans right now is the faith in this document. We may choose to interpret it differently, but without it, we risk complete collapse. If we abolish the Constitution tomorrow, here's what will happen. Same-sex marriage would be illegal in 14 states. No! Abortion would be illegal in 30 states. Segregation will technically be legal in 32 states. Judges, Abraham Lincoln said the people should not overthrow the Constitution, but to overthrow the men who abuse it. Thank you.
Again. Will you tell us about these two young women?
Yes. They're both real debaters. We put out a call for young women debaters to come in and audition. These were, I would say, the best few days of our lives. Just meeting.
Incredible.
Truly, there's so many brilliant young women out there doing this kind of thing. It was very difficult to choose because everyone was so talented. So Thursday Williams, who you just saw, is 17 years old. She's interned at the Sonia and Selena Sotomayor program. Mm-hmm. She did a judicial internship there. She's done constitutional debate at NYU. She wants to become a Supreme Court justice one day. She's a really just brilliant young woman. Rosdely Ciprian is 14. And she actually joined our team when she was 12. I wanted to cast a 15-year-old because I wanted someone who was my age when I did the contest, but she was actually so smart that we just decided to cast her. And she actually helped us. She does parliamentary-style debate, which is what we do at the end of the show. And so that's a form that didn't exist when I was in high school. Mm. So she and her debate coach helped us with that form. So she's largely responsible for developing what we do at the end of the show.
Obviously, part of the show is about the Constitution is really meant for white male landowners, and that's part of what the discussion. So I'm guessing it is not a coincidence to cast two young women of color, because if the Constitution isn't for women, it's definitely not for women of color.
Yes. it's not a coincidence. And obviously, I'm telling a story. You know, I'm telling my own personal family story, which is, you know, a limited perspective. It's white working class woman's perspective, and I wanted to find ways to also just acknowledge, like, tell my story without erasing other people's stories, which I try to do throughout the piece. But I thought, if I'm going to bring someone who was my age when I did this, I want them not to have my same background. Mm-hmm. So and that was a very deliberate choice. Yes.
Oliver, what is it like to direct someone whose story is, Heidi's a performer, but this is also her story, and it's a story about abuse in her family, and about your grandmother being a mail order bride. I mean, very, very personal things come up in this show. Can you share with us how you talked about that?
Sure. Yeah, so Heidi talks in the show, she brings up this idea of sometimes of some of us, a lot of us, being forced to be two people, in this culture and around violence. Mm-hmm. And during the process, what sort of became apparent was Heidi is both a writer and an actor, and she's really great at both of those things. And one of the challenges that we had working on the piece was that if in the rehearsal the writer would be critical in very specific ways, and the actor would be critical in very specific ways of herself. And so we had to actually develop a process that allowed sort of a safe space for her to be able to just tell the stories and try and find ways to sort of keep the criticism in the moment sort of out of it. So I think that, like, one of the ways we approach working on something that's so personal is to not take any of it for granted and to actually decide how the process was going to work, what the values of the room are going to be. And this is a part of how I feel like I've evolved as a person and an artist, was being able to sort of decide not just, like, make a good play, but actually make a really good process. And in the process of doing that, allow someone's, like, full humanity to be allowed to come out. And that allows you a space where someone can talk very practically about very tough stuff, because it's going to be protected when it comes out in the room.
What was that process like for you?
The whole making the play was difficult for me, as Oliver knows, on many levels. Just I had to confront this history of violence in my family. I have a long history of domestic violence in my family and sexual assault. So that was rough. And I also had to go back into all of that with my mom. Let me just be very clear. My father was a great father, mm-hmm. is a great father. This has to do with the generations before me. Mm-hmm. But I had to go back, you know, I wanted to be respectful of my mom and her story. And so she and I went to some pretty emotional places, mm-hmm. like when I was talking to her about what this story would look like. And that at first was very painful and very difficult, but it has turned out to be a fantastic thing for us. I will say that the room has all, you know, Oliver and everyone in our room, we have a fantastic group of people working with us, has just been, from the beginning, made an incredibly safe space for all of these stories to come out. I think that has been helpful. And we have a kind of also, because the play is so much about what is done to people's bodies without their consent, mm-hmm. and the way this document sort of didn't treat most of us actually as full human beings with autonomy, bodily autonomy, and consent over our own bodies. We have a guiding principle of consent in the room, which is, mm-hmm. so there's a lot of, like, you don't ever have to share anything you don't want to share. There's a lot of checking in. There's a lot of ways of managing the room so that everyone feels like they have autonomy and decision-making power over how they present themselves in the play.
My guests are Heidi Schreck and Oliver Butler. We're talking about What the Constitution Means to Me, which is now on Broadway. It's also, it's very funny, it's educational. I learned about the idea of positive rights, a positive rights document. I want you to explain this to the audience so people can take away something today.
Sure.
From your show, which will make them smarter.
Wonderful. Yeah, this is what I learned from my show. So do you want to explain positive rights?
Sure. Yeah. So what we learned from talking to constitutional scholars is there are two kinds of rights, especially in relation to sort of constitutions. Positive rights are, well, I'll start, negative rights are sort of what our constitution mainly is. They are the rights that protect you from the government, the right to not be, you know, infringed on by the government. That's a negative right. A positive right is one that's actively provided for you. It would be like the right to health care, the right to education,
To a fair trial.
The right to a fair trial.
Like, we do have a few positive rights in our constitution, including the right to a fair trial.
That's right. And so Heidi advocates, and I've got to say, over the course of the doing the show, like in the question about like keep, abolish, you know, I was probably way more on the sort of keep, a more sort of conservative view of what we really should be doing with our own document. And where we've landed now, I have been convinced by the process and by Heidi, not necessarily to abolish our constitution, but that we really need systemic change and that positive rights are absolutely something that is necessary for everyone in our country to be given their full humanity in the eyes of the law.
And the two amendments, we've got about 2.5 minutes left. You're a director, sure. I can tell you that. You talk a lot about the 9th and the 14th Amendments.
Yes.
Will you share why?
Sure. I talk about the 9th Amendment because I was really obsessed with it as a teenager. So it is the amendment that says, well, it says, I'll sum it up. It basically says that it makes clear that just because a certain right is not listed in the Constitution, it doesn't mean you don't have that right, right? They're making clear that obviously they couldn't list every single right we have. So it's this like little mysterious thing that says like, hey, we couldn't fit it all in here. To me, it's the amendment that allows us to imagine a different kind of future. To me, and I don't know what their intention was, I mean, I've read a lot about it, but to me, it's the thing that says, you know, we don't know what the future is going to look like. We're going to put this here as a kind of way to allow this document to grow and change and evolve as the world becomes something that we can't even imagine right now. That's how I interpret it. So I love it for that very reason. It also happens to be the amendment that made a lot of decisions about women's bodies possible, right? It's sort of, because women's bodies were left out of the Constitution from the beginning, it sort of allowed the Supreme Court to say, like, okay, we'll use this thing that says there are other rights located in here and in what's called the penumbra and in the shadows of the Constitution. And we'll use this like little flashlight to shine a light into the other amendments and find, for example, the right to privacy, which gives, you know, well, a woman the right to decide what to do with her own body. Although in Roe v. Wade, it was really the right for a doctor to help a woman decide what to do with her body. So I'm obsessed with it, both because it's like a very poetic amendment and also because so many decisions about women's bodies have been decided with its help. And then the 14th Amendment is about equality under the law. So, yeah.
That's that.
That's equality. That. Yeah.
Favorite person who's come backstage in our last 30 seconds? Who has it been?
What's that?
The favorite person who's come backstage?
Oh, my favorite person who's come backstage? There's so many good people who've come back.
So many. Diane Sawyer, Hillary Steve
Clinton,
Martin.
Hillary Clinton, Jessica Lange.
Chelsea Clinton.
Glenn
Close.
That's a pretty good list so far. Heidi Schreck's What the Constitution Means to Me is currently on Broadway at the Helen Hayes Theater. Oliver and Heidi, thanks for coming by All of It.
Thanks for
having
us.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.